We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Coast to Coast on the Her Hoop Stats Podcast Network. I'm Karina Mustafa alongside Calvin Wetzel, and we have arrived at the Final Four of March Madness. We're going to get into all of that. We're going to recap the Elite Eight. We're going to preview those Final Four matchups for you. But first, we're going to start with a little bit of a conversation around women's sports and women's hoops and some of the stuff that's kind of happened over the last couple of weeks of the tournament. Cal, you ready?
I could not be more ready for this episode. I'm so amped from this past weekend of women's basketball and what the momentum and the moment. I'm so ready.
The moment. That is a great way to kind of segue into our first headline of the week, which I kind of labeled as the dichotomy of women's sports, because it feels like there's been a lot of growth recently, and with growth kind of comes two ends of the spectrum, the good and the bad. And we'll start with the good, which is the L. Duncan, Andrea Carter, Chinne Ogumike trio on ESPN, and their coverage, their studio coverage throughout the tournament. They have been, and I know like everybody on Twitter has kind of talked about this too, they have been the example of what excellence in sports broadcasting and sports coverage looks like, particularly in women's basketball. I think like, and I think you will agree with me, Cal, like they have been extremely knowledgeable. They've had their personalities be really shown well across their coverage. Like you can tell there's a lot of chemistry there, and like no one's had anything bad to say about them because they've just been that good. Kind of like, what have your thoughts been on that trio, that ESPN trio, which they are taking their show to Cleveland? Elle did tweet about that, I think, today or yesterday. But like, how have they been so far? And like, what have you really liked about them throughout the tournament?
Just fantastic. I love that you said sports broadcasting, not even just women's basketball. Like this is, and like with other sports, I'm more of a casual follower. Like I'll watch football or the NBA sometimes in those seasons in between, like the women's basketball seasons, you know, and like, as far as the other talk shows and studios and stuff like that in those sports, like this is number one. This isn't the best women's basketball group that we've had in studio. This is the best sports studio trio that I feel like I've ever seen. I'm not even saying that lightly. They're so good. And last week when we talked about South Carolina checking every box in terms of what makes a team good, this is what they are. They are the South Carolina of studio shows. They check every box because any one thing that they're good at, like you mentioned, they're knowledgeable. Like it's not like these are the first people who have ever gotten on and been knowledgeable about sports, obviously. And the chemistry, like we've seen people with chemistry before, and so on and so forth down the list. But putting it all together in one package in every single thing at an elite, elite level, it's ESPN nailed it with this group. And I hope that we find a way for this to continue in some form after the tournament. I don't know what Shanae's plans are in terms of the WNBA. I don't know if we could get this back next year throughout the whole regular season, but whatever it is, like, I hope this isn't the end because it's been phenomenal. They're so funny. They're mm-hmm. so energetic. They're so smooth, all three of them individually and with each other. And like you said, the knowledge, they know so much about women's basketball and just the sport in general. They break down what's happening on the court, what fans need to know about the matchups, everything. I could not be more impressed. And this is the point where, like, usually, like, when I'm parked in front of the TV during March Madness watching hoops, for me, it's like, obviously early in the tournament, there's always a game going on. One goes to commercial, there's another one. At this point in the tournament, one game at a time, game goes to halftime. That's when I go use the bathroom, get snacks, whatever. I couldn't do it this time. I couldn't. I have to watch halftime. I'll wait for the commercial to go do whatever I got to do because I cannot. Halftime is as entertaining as the game. That's how good they were.
Yeah, and I love that you brought up kind of like what we talked about South Carolina last week as like using them as kind of a metaphor, because you're totally right. Like, you look at Elle, who's kind of the point guard of the entire broadcast. She dictates everything. She facilitates the conversation. I mean, obviously, like, we know, like, she does SportsCenter. She does all this coverage for ESPN. So she's very, very good in her hosting role while also still giving analysis. Then you have Drea, who's kind of like that shooting guard, who is always going to knock down the shots, always going to perform really well, really performs well off the ball, on the ball, wherever you need her to be, like very, very adaptable. You could call her a combo guard too, if you'd like. I know a lot of people like that too. And then you have like Shanae, who's kind of like the forward or the center of the whole piece of the puzzle, just kind of roots you, brings her perspective as well. Like Drea, obviously former Lady Voller, played at Tennessee. Shanae, WNBA player, like is on NBA Today with ESPN, has kind of dove into like her broadcasting bag over the last year and a half and or 2 years or however long it's been now. So yeah, they really just fit really well together. I mean, you have like Drea and Shanae, like Elle is counting them down to say the key like person or player or whatever, the key factor. And they say refs at the exact same time. They look at each other. Like, it was clearly not planned. They dap each other up. Like, it's that kind of stuff that just makes the broadcast so entertaining to watch. And, like, I'll also add another piece of the puzzle, too, is, like, having broadcasters who represent the players that we're watching on the screen, too, is so, so important because, like, nobody else is going to be able to bring you the perspective of the players quite like three Black women can on the screen. And I think that's like such an important piece of the puzzle and an important reason why this broadcast works really well. And so I really hope ESPN has been reading all of our tweets, reading all of our comments. Like, you have like current players praising them, you have former players praising them, obviously all the fans, the media, and everybody calling them the big three. And so I totally, totally very much agree with that. And like, this is the kind of resources that women's sports and women's hoops kind of deserves all the time. And so I'm glad we're getting a taste of it now. I'm glad we're getting the hype because like, I'm hoping that this becomes the standard for like everything else, you know?
Absolutely. And this I was going to say that too. This is what women's sports deserves. And this is how good it can be if broadcast companies, media companies put effort into actually trying to make the product good, to invest in the product. It can be awesome. It can be as good as anything in any sport if you just want it to be, you know? And so it is so cool. And like you said, the representation, big deal, obviously, Black women, but also specifically like Dre and Shanae, who played in for Tennessee and Stanford, which, by the way, I love that they kind of let their bias come out, but also like not to the point of like the analysis being wrong. Like, they're not gonna, like, they both their teams
just in terms of like rooting for the teams. And then Elle chose violence, where she was like, NC State beat both of your teams, and I was like, damn, I really felt for them in that moment.
Funny, I did too, but it's funny, it's good content, it's funny, and like letting themselves go to that point with the bias, but at the same time, not having any type of analysis that's like negative about NC State, because obviously NC State has been playing so well, which we'll get to. Like, just the perfect balance of both sides of that. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, and I also, I do want to shout out the Canadian coverage as well, because TSN up here in Canada also had their own studio panel with Kate Burness, Kia Nurse, and her sister Tamika Nurse. They have been crushing March Madness coverage as well, and they were on the panel as well. So Canadian viewers kind of got the best of both worlds, where we were able to watch both the ESPN broadcast at times and the Canadian broadcast at times, which, like I said, you have former players, Kia Nurse, a current player, on the panel as well. So yeah, just a lot of really good analysis and coverage of the women's tournament throughout March Madness so far. Really excited to see the Eldrea and Chiney show in Cleveland as well for the Final Four. And now let's go to the bad side of women's sports and kind of stuff that's kind of been brought to light. And I have to say, this is probably one of the most bizarre things I've ever kind of observed happen in sports. And in case you missed it, the 3-point lines in Portland were not even for the games that happened there. And it's funny because everybody's kind of like, how did nobody catch this? Because when you see the difference in the courts, it is palpable. Like, you can tell one 3-point line is shorter than the other. But at the same time, you're like, well, did you catch it when the games were being played? That's kind of like the why this is a little bit bizarre, because it's like nobody caught it. But this is just like, how does this happen? Like, I've seen like instances in basketball where like players can tell if like the hoop itself, like the rim, is like not high enough or too low or whatever. Like, I've seen that get adjusted before, but I've never seen something like this happen with the 3-point line. So I'm very curious, Cal, like your thoughts on kind of the whole like ordeal and where you kind of stand here.
I am saying nothing new, obviously, here with agreeing with you and the entire world of Twitter and being like really confused about how none of us, including myself, obviously noticed this through 4 entire basketball games.
Like, we watched the games and we didn't see it.
We watched like 4 of them. It was like 8 hours of basketball. And like, how many people were in that arena looking at it? Like, obviously, at least, you know, if we want to defend ourselves at home, our excuse is that, you know, we most of the time we're not seeing them both at the same time. Usually the camera's on one or the other. I still think we probably should have noticed at some point, but how did all the people in the arena, like, it was a fan in the upper deck, I believe, who was the first one to notice it. And the upper deck has the best view. There was no fan in the upper deck from the first 4 games who noticed it. It's crazy. But this is another one of those things. Like, women's basketball deserves better. It's so dumb. I just hate to, like, this is what women's basketball has to deal with. Obviously, it's also extremely funny and we can make all the jokes about it, but at some point, this is way too high of a level of basketball. You're talking about the Elite Eight in the NCAA tournament, like, for things like this to be happening. So, you know, I was wondering what you meant when you wrote in the notes the dichotomy thing. Like, I actually didn't know where you were going to go with that, but it's a perfect word to describe kind of the good and the bad. We've seen the whole spectrum throughout this tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's going to happen with growth. Like, and we know that like women's sports has historically been at that disadvantage, and things take time. And so when stuff like this pops up, like, you know, we fix it. We reflect on the standards that need to be set. Like, obviously, like, there's also been a ton of history with the NCAA not holding the same standard to the women's side of the tournament as the men's side. The women's side not being able to use the branding until like 2 years ago. That one year where Sedona Prince went viral on TikTok and the internet for showing like the gym facilities that the women's teams were getting in comparison to the men. Like, this is nothing new. Like, this has been happening, but now the spotlight feels so large that we need to start fixing things up. Not that we didn't before, but like, it just is becoming so much more apparent now with kind of all the eyes and the attraction to the game. But yeah, very weird situation with the 3-point lines. I feel like we were all traumatized after that too. Like, the next game, we're like looking at the court to like make sure that it's the correct. I'm like, I never would have thought. And like, even like the players and the coaches were kind of going on Twitter to talk about how they don't really have a lot of time to kind of figure that stuff out either. Like, their warm-ups are really quick and they kind of just are focused on getting into the rhythm of things. And I think somebody was tweeting about how, like, Gonzaga shot like 18% of three, and they should be like livid about the 3-point lines not being even, because, like, that's just, I really wonder how that affected the rhythm of some of the teams, especially the ones that lost. Because, like, shooting is very much like your muscle memory when you're a basketball player, when you've been doing it so many times. But I'm very curious about, like, the distance and, like, how your body would actually, like, react to lines being different. Because, like, that's also kind of, like, a weird thing to think about.
Yeah, you know, the stats that they put up on the screen during that game, and then they updated them in SportsCenter later, the shorter three-point line, which was the incorrect three-point line, you think, like, oh, shorter, closer to the hoop, you should shoot better on that one. But they shot worse, because it doesn't matter that it was shorter. It matters that it was incorrect because of what you said, the muscle memory. It was 9 inches shorter. And obviously, if you have a line that's, like, 5 feet shorter, first off, everyone's going to notice it. Second off, if you didn't, it is going to be easier because you're that much closer. But 9 inches is enough that, like, no one ever shoot. Even, like, mid-range people who take those long twos, they're not shooting 9 inches in front of the three-point line. No one shoots from there other than Jantel Lavender. I don't know if you remember how many times in the WNBA she stepped her foot on the line when trying to shoot a three. But yeah, aside from her, like, no one shoots from there. So it's the muscle memory thing. The real 3-point line, even though it was further, was the one with the higher percentage. So yeah, it's just like a weird situation all around. But the thing is, like, I know people have been saying, like, oh yeah, sometimes the rims are off or whatever. And even, like, in the NBA and the men's side, you know, like, they make mistakes, it happens. But the difference is that on the women's side, the coaches were told, hey, we can fix this, but it'll take however long, and then we'll lose the broadcast window on ABC. On the men's side, so the coaches chose to still play it, right? On the men's side, there is no chance that that game is not going to be broadcast on ABC or CBS or whatever channel it is if it takes place an hour or two later. Whatever the next thing on that channel was is getting pushed back because the men's game is getting shown. So that is the difference to me, that the women are kind of told, hey, like, if you want to be on TV, you just have to deal with this. And so the coaches said, all right, we'll play it.
That's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up. Cause I know they also talked about that on the studio panel, about, you know, just like them electing to still play when they could have really, like, in theory, like, postponed those games and made sure that things were done properly. So yeah, that's another thing to add to the making sure the standards for the women are just as high as the standards for the men. But yeah, kind of the good and bad, the weird, the bizarre of the weekend that was in the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. But let's talk about the Elite Eight and talk about how those games went in just a second.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
All right, Cal, let's coast through college. The Elite Eight matchups: South Carolina defeated Oregon State, NC State defeated Texas, Iowa defeated LSU, and UConn defeated USC. There are a lot of good games, as well as the Sweet 16, which we didn't really get to talk about because we record once a week, but out of these teams, like, where do you kind of want to start? Which game did you enjoy the most? And, like, any players that kind of stood out to you from this weekend of Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games?
From a just neutral basketball standpoint, I think I enjoyed Iowa-LSU the most. In terms of players that stood out, though, I think there was a lot of players in a lot of the other games that stood out, too. In particular, Isaiah James from NC State stood out. Big time. Knocked down 5 for 5 from three from the correct three-point line in the first half. Really set the tone. Texas could never climb back from that. And she's honestly been cooking this whole last couple weeks, this whole tournament that was kind of on the biggest stage to get them to the Final Four. But it's been really cool to see her ball out. And I am so interested to watch. I know I'm skipping ahead Final Four preview, but to see how South Carolina guards her and if she can kind of continue that, because that hasn't really, she's had a phenomenal season. She hasn't been that sort of lights out Caitlin Clark shooter. She's been a good shooter. She hasn't been like one of the best shooters in the country all year until all of a sudden now. So she's shooting, I think, 57% from three in the tournament.
It's pretty good.
Pretty good.
Yeah. I think it's funny because my bracket's done pretty well this year, all things considered. And NC State is the one team that I did not have make the Final Four. And I was like, I won't be ashamed to admit that I was wrong about them. Shout out Ari Chambers, who we've had on the podcast, to her home teams making
on both the
men's. Yeah, men's and women's side. And as well as UConn too. But yeah, they've been really impressive. They beat Stanford in the Sweet 16 to make it to the Elite Eight, and then they defeated Texas. Thoughts on Stanford? Because Stanford was the team that I had making it to the Final Four. They obviously go down. I think looking at that game, a lot of people are going to point out the fact that Cameron Brink fouled out again. And I saw a little talk about like her draft stock falling because of that. I got to say, like, I think I disagree with her draft stock falling. I think it's just gonna be a matter of just like coaching, and like once she hits the W2, like she'll develop more. Like, development doesn't stop just because you finish college. And I think this is one of those things that is a very coachable thing to just kind of get better. Because she is like a big blocker, like she is a big player on defense. It's just a matter of like being a little bit more controlled. But yeah, kind of thoughts on Stanford's run and kind of being halted by NC State and just like their season overall and this like Cameron Brink era kind of coming to a close.
Yeah, they never really did quite put it together in the backcourt. Stanford did to get over that hump. But in terms of Cameron Brink's foul trouble and the draft stock and things like that, WNBA refs have their own problem. I don't think they're quite as bad as what we've seen in some of the games in college. So there's that. But also, WNBA, you get an extra foul. She's good at same number of minutes in the game.
That's true.
Fouls instead of five. So no, I don't think her draft stock, I don't think that's the only reason, but I think it's notable. I don't think her draft stock's dropping at all because of that. I think she's going to be fine in the WNBA. And like you said, development and all of that. But Stanford, yeah, you would have loved to see kind of that everything click with them in terms of the backcourt, because Cameron Brink and Kiki Uriafin, you don't see a frontcourt duo have a season like they did very often. And credit to NC State for really, for a while, Kiki sort of went off, I think, in the fourth quarter. And Kiki, I think, had four fouls too.
Yeah, but she was a foul
for
trouble
a while.
Well.
Yeah. They really held both of them somewhat in check. I think if you look at Kiki Uriafin's box score, I'll probably say she had a good game, but at least for the first two, maybe three quarters, NC State was able to hold both of them in check, which doesn't happen very often. Usually you hold down one, the other goes off. So that was all about NC State's defense. But Stanford, yeah, that's tough. I did have them coming out of this bracket, but I did also feel like this was definitely the most likely bracket for everyone to be wrong. And I think
yeah,
that was the one you were wrong. I was wrong. A lot of people were wrong on this one.
Yeah, for sure. And I think NC State's run has been super fun, and they've been really solid. I mean, to knock off Stanford and Texas, who we talked about last week being one of those solid teams that was kind of getting by quietly. I think those are really solid performances to set them up against South Carolina, who has had some close ones. has had some close ones recently, which I love because I love all the close games and I love all the chaos. But I think that's going to make their Final Four matchup really exciting, which we will get to. But before we get to that, some other teams here that I did want to talk about that didn't make the Final Four. Oregon State, I think, like, we should talk about, like, what a tournament from them. And I know it was super tough for them to go down to South Carolina in the Elite Eight, but they defeated Notre Dame. They took them out in the Sweet 16, and then they did go down to South Carolina in that Elite Eight. But that first half was, even the first, like, three quarters were pretty competitive. And, you know, we talked about kind of the different styles of basketball and how those would clash. But what do you kind of make of Oregon State's run? And, like, they should be so proud of, like, what they did in their future.
They should. They should be so proud because they were picked 10th in the Pac-12 preseason poll. And I love Talia Von Ohlhoffen talking her stuff on Twitter about that. Just tweeting a screenshot of the Pac-12 preseason poll with nothing
else. A picture speaks 1,000 words or whatever
it does.
The saying is. Yeah.
And that was perfect. They forget about top 10 in the Pac-12. They were top 10 in the country. They were one of the top 10 teams in the country. And they played like it throughout the whole tournament. Last week, we talked about that potential matchup against Notre Dame, which happened, and how without Kylie Watson, Oregon State was going to have that advantage inside. And they did. Obviously, the rebounding was really where Oregon State was able to win that game. Side note, justice for Hannah Hidalgo in that game.
Oh, my God, yes.
The bad side of that dichotomy in women's hoops. Hated that. Nothing to take away from Oregon State winning that game.
Someone called, like, Hannah getting her nose ring out, like, a surgery on the sideline. They were joking about it, but I was like, that's kind of real. Like, that's kind of valid to say that it was, like, a mini surgery. Like, it looked painful, and it very clearly took her out of rhythm for the rest of the game. So, yeah, you're totally right. Justice for Hannah Hidalgo. We won't, like, stay too long on that just because of time. But I already, like, I can't believe that feels like ages ago, but, like, also that it just happened. Like, so much is happening in this tournament. But that was, like, that was actually crazy. Like, I still can't believe that happened.
It was ridiculous. And whatever the rule is, like, if it's – probably, I don't know if it's a dumb rule or not. Maybe it matters for safety, but if it is, then you got to enforce it all year, and you got to enforce it before the game when you talk to her, because they told her before the game you can keep it in. At that point, like, you can't just decide in the middle of the game to change your mind. Like,
listen, I'll tell you, like, I used to play volleyball in high school, and we had to either take off our jewelry or tape it with, like, masking tape or bandage or whatever you had to do. And, like, we knew that was a rule, but the thing is, like, it always depended on, like, which ref you had at your game. Like, if they were super stingy about it, like, some refs would let you keep the bandage on. Some, like, really insisted that you had to take, you know, your earrings, your piercings, like, anything off. But, like, most of the time, the bandage was fine. And I think that's what kind of got me with the Hannah stuff, where, like, they said that she had the bandage on, but they still wanted her to remove it. And I think the fact that you were enforcing that this late in the tournament after an entire season of her playing. And, like, I saw W players, like, Natasha Cloud in the middle of the game. And, like, I saw, like, Natasha Cloud is tweeting, like, pictures of her playing with her nose ring. She's like, this is going to get me in trouble, but, like, I play with my nose ring. And, like, I'm like, it's like, yeah, like, that's just how it goes. And I think, like, having the bandage not be enough to me is ridiculous. Like, and then, like, I didn't play basketball, but I played volleyball, and it's the same rule. And if I was allowed to get away with the bandage, then so should these players. And I just think it's a little bit ridiculous the way that it all went down and the way that it was enforced. But yeah, super bumped for Notre Dame on that end for sure. But like we said, Oregon State, great run to the tournament. They did fall. Are there any teams they kind of want to talk about before we move on to our Final Four preview?
I do just want to hit on USC real quick, because Juju, it was heartbreaking. And we talked about this in March, how there's 68 teams in the tournament, 67 of them in like that. But to see Juju's emotions and everything like that was heartbreaking. Yeah. But
I was ready to cry with her, honestly. Oh, my God.
Yeah. No, me too. Me too. I do think for USC, there is a bright, bright future. Obviously, Juju, 3 more years, and you have the number one recruiting class coming in. You got some hoopers coming in
some of them are playing in the McDonald's all
they are
game. So at that,
yeah, I'm gonna be watching
the episode will be out by the time that they play, but Yeah. I mean, like you said, a lot of number ones in the recruiting class.
Yeah, absolutely. And so for USC, like, it does hurt, obviously, from their perspective to see the season that they had and then them come up short to the Final Four. But at the same time, this is the best season that they've had in a long, long time, getting to the Elite Eight, a team with a lot of history, obviously, going back into the 80s, but not nearly the same type of recent history as teams like UConn or South Carolina. So for them to take this step in Juju's freshman year and get to the Elite Eight, and knowing that it's only going to get better in the next few years from here and they're really going to be back on the map, I think absolutely going to be in a Final Four at some point during Juju's career, maybe as soon as next season. You can have a lot to look forward to, but obviously that it's just hard seeing players in motion like that.
For sure. And I really love, like, Paige kind of leaving the UConn huddle a little bit earlier to go over to Juju and kind of, like, console her a little bit and say some kind words. Like, obviously, I don't know what she said, but it looked like it was a really nice embrace. And so, like, from one vet to the freshman fire that was Juju Watkins this season, I think that was really sweet to see. And, yeah, a sad end to USC's run, but also, like, there is nothing to hang your head about for the year that they've had. And to go down to a team like UConn, like, I think that is more than okay on USC's part. And they should be really proud for the season they had. Juju, just, like, again, before we move on to Final Four talk, I was talking about this with Mark Schindler because we were on the phone watching the game together. And I was talking about how, like, the way Juju moves is, like, so much with so much purpose. She moves, and like Mark was saying, like, she moves like a pro. Like, everything she does looks like a pro. And she's a freshman. She's in her first year of college. She just finished up her first year of college ball. And I think, like, that's just so exciting to me, like, for her potential. And she should look back on this and, like, just, it's only up from here. Like, it can only get better. And she's already at such an elite level. So, yeah, really, really good season for USC. And they'll be back better and stronger next year, the year after that, and the year after that. Very excited for their future and for what Lindsay has done with this squad. All right, let's move on to Final Four talk, Cal. I know you're excited because you're going to be in Cleveland for these games, and I'm not, very sad, but you can blame my school for that. Let's get into this first matchup, which will be on Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN, NC State versus South Carolina. Man, oh man, am I excited for these games. Let's talk about it, Cal. What can we expect in this game? And are we going to get an overtime game? Because we haven't gotten one yet, even though we said we were going to. But I'm kind of yearning for one overtime game, at least. But what do you think? What are your thoughts on NC State versus South Carolina?
Yeah, has it been since the first round since we had an overtime? Did we get one in the second round? We didn't get one this past weekend.
Yeah, definitely not in the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, I don't think. So, yeah, it's been a long time. It has.
We're due for one.
Since we got,
we're due for one. I wouldn't mind any of these three games going overtime because I love basketball. Give me five more minutes of basketball. I know, you're in this camp sometimes on Twitter who, when there's a really late game and you're on the East Coast, obviously, and you'll tweet like, let's wrap it up, we don't need overtime. And I know a lot of people say that. And like, I
stayed up for the Elite Eight, all of them.
You did.
Okay?
Well, I did. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you. I understand it. It's just for me personally. Like, I don't care. Sign me up. Seven overtimes. I love hoop. I can't get enough. 3 a.m. I'm all in. But this weekend, I'm bummed that you're not going to be there, by the way. But if anyone is going to be there who's listening, hit me up. Love to come say hi because I'll be in Cleveland. For this game specifically, NC State, South Carolina. Whew, this is going to be fun. This is going to be really fun. Can NC State stay hot, especially as Isaiah James on offense? Because they're going to have to. I don't think you can beat South Carolina if you have a cold shooting night. I really don't think you can. I don't care if you're NC State or UConn or Iowa or anyone. If your threes aren't falling, you're not winning that game. And often your threes are falling and you're still not winning that game. But that's at least a prerequisite. That's a hard word to say, isn't it?
Prerequisite. It is a hard word to say. I sympathize with you on that.
I do think NC State has some good size when you look at River Baldwin, Mimi Collins, Madison Hayes. They have some players who can match up, not fully, but as close as maybe you can expect with that South Carolina front court. And so those players are going to have to stay on the court because South Carolina can get you in foul trouble, obviously. And when, if you start having a, like what happened to Oregon State in that Elite Eight game with Reagan Beers picking up her third on what was not a good call.
That was
Gardner picking up her third.
Horrendous. Yeah.
Yeah. But just that whole game. But if that happens, it's a huge, huge uphill battle for you if you're NC State. But NC State has a lot of athleticism and size and skill. They have a lot of talent on this team. So I like, no shade to Oregon State, but more than Oregon State. So I do think that they have the potential to hang in this game. They're going to have to play their best basketball ever. That's, everyone always says that. You got to play your best basketball to beat South Carolina. It's the least groundbreaking analysis ever, but it's true. And they have been. They've been playing their best basketball the last couple of weeks. Can they do it for two more games or one more game even in this one? I don't know.
Yeah, and I'm gonna add on to more basketball cliche and say that they have to play good basketball for 40 minutes. Like, they have to play for 40 minutes. Because what I've seen, what we've all seen with South Carolina and their opponents is that a lot of the opponents who have been competitive with South Carolina in the first half or even all the way to the third quarter, like, great. But at some point in the game, late in the game, when you get to crunch time, things kind of fall apart a little bit. South Carolina goes on a little run, and it kind of tends to be over after that because, like you said, their defense is really good. Their offense is really good. They're going to be able to lock you up and be able to make those final runs in the fourth quarter. I think if NC State can hang around and make it competitive all the way to the final minute, that's going to be your best shot because – when South Carolina gets a run and they start doing the Macarena on live TV, like, it's over. Like you're done. So that's what I'm going to be looking for against South Carolina. I think, like, even moving forward, like going to the championship game, like, whichever team is going to be able to play all 40 minutes against South Carolina is going to be the team that has the best chance to kind of upset them and win in this tournament. So yeah, that's kind of what I'm looking for NC State versus South Carolina. Then we have our second matchup, which will be following that game on Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern, and that is UConn versus Iowa. Man, this one is going to be one for the books as well. I mean, like, we're okay, just as an aside, I feel like we're so blessed with such good Final Four matchups, and it makes me even more excited for what the championship game will be. But UConn versus Iowa. UConn obviously has been kind of shorthanded this whole season with, they've been hit with injuries, but they've been able to make it. And I think one of the things that I kind of see in this matchup, as well as both UConn and Iowa's kind of runs, is like, motivation is so underrated as like a factor when it comes to March Madness. Because you look at the Iowa game versus LSU, which was very, very competitive and like honestly one of my favorite games of the tournament so far. I think that motivation, and like, both sides had that motivation. Like, that is why that game, like, they came in playing at such a fast pace that kind of lasted throughout the whole game until those like final 30 seconds, or like they dragged it out for another 15 minutes. But like, the pace was so fast because the motivation was there. LSU coming in as the defending champions, they felt like they had something to prove. Iowa coming in as a team that lost to LSU in the championship game last year, they had something to prove, and they ultimately like used that to win the game as well. Like, it's not, it is about like the personnel and the schemes and all that, but like, when it comes to March Madness, and I guess the April Madness now, like my dad joked about yesterday, like, that to me is such a big factor. And when it comes to UConn versus Iowa, I also see that, especially like UConn with Paige and like her being healthy again finally after like the stuff that she went through, them being shorthanded, like I said, they're super hungry. And of course, like, Iowa, Caitlin Clark, her senior year, her last year with this squad, her last chance to kind of get that championship, they also have a lot of motivation to kind of bring to the table. So I know that was kind of like a long-winded speech, but I think that's like one of the biggest things that I'm kind of looking forward to in this matchup as well.
I love it because I feel like I give long-winded speeches a lot on here, and I love I love you going off. And I think everything you said nailed it, hit the nail on the head. When I look at this matchup, I think back on 3 years ago when Paige and Caitlin were freshmen and they played in the tournament in the Sweet 16, and how unbelievable it is to think about the shift, not obviously in women's basketball in terms of like how big of a deal this game is going to be compared to any game 3 years ago because of just the eyeballs and the way the game has grown, but also specifically with the narrative of these two teams and these two players coming into that game. All the narrative was Paige is better, UConn's better, Caitlin is going to have a really tough time winning this game. That is exactly what happened. UConn won by 20. Paige won the National Player of the Year. It was all about Paige and UConn. Caitlin and Iowa were like quote-unquote underdogs. And look at how it shifted. Like Caitlin, no one's ever going to talk about Caitlin Clark as an underdog in 2024. That's not how it works anymore. And it's crazy to kind of think back on that evolution. And there are some other players too left around still. Like, it's not just these two. Gabby Marshall, you talk about Caitlin being a senior. Gabby Marshall's a senior. Kate Martin's a senior. Fifth years even. So,
Kate Martin, oh my God, even just as an aside, like her in that LSU game, like she was so good. Like she was grabbing those rebounds as if that basketball was her baby and she was not letting anybody else take it. I enjoyed watching her so, so much. I'm so glad she had a good game too. But yeah, I had to get that in there too before I forget. But yeah, keep going.
She deserves a big shout out. She played a phenomenal game. And I think Sydney Afalter is someone who stepped up a lot, especially since she's been the starting lineup when Molly Davis went down with that injury. Iowa to me is almost like a little bit underrated in terms of their size and rebounding. I think it's not like this is an LSU or a South Carolina. Obviously I'm not saying that, it's far from that, but I also don't view this team as like a tiny little weak team that just is full of little quick players who shoots threes and never rebounds. Like that's not what it is. Kate Martin, fantastic on the boards. Hannah Stolke has really had a fantastic season. I think the narrative gets shaped by what Caitlin Clark does and her skill, but I think this team is more than that. And what'll be interesting to see is like against UConn, people keep talking about like they're shorthanded. Obviously they have so many injuries. They don't go to the bench very much. Like Paige has been playing 40 minutes a game. Ashton Shade been playing 39 minutes a game. And I think these players are really well conditioned. I think they're equipped to handle it. Where it comes into play is if you start getting into foul trouble. So can Caitlin penetrate and draw some fouls? That could change the game at all. But I do think like the way UConn plays defense, we're going to see them try to prevent that from Caitlin. And we're going to see Caitlin get more threes the same way that LSU. I'm not saying UConn's going to start off the game going under screens like LSU did. That was an awful mistake, obviously, against Caitlin Clark. But LSU's defense is built, and you can see it in the last two Iowa matchups last year and this year, to really live with those threes and keep people, especially like Caitlin Clark, out of the paint in a way that, you know, the first three Iowa opponents were a little bit different than that in the tournament. And I think this could be a similar type of game where we see Caitlin go off from three, which is great. But at the same time, I think UConn would rather live with that to some extent. Like she can beat you no matter what, but you need to keep your players on the floor. So that's kind of something that I'm watching for in this game.
Yeah. And another thing too, that reminds me of just like what Angel Reese was doing in that game against Iowa in the first half, where like she was doing a great job of disrupting Caitlin's passing. And I think that's something that Caitlin still has to nail down the timing a little bit of her passing. It was a little bit loose to kind of start the game yesterday, and players are going to take advantage of that. And so is UConn. And that's also something that I'm going to be watching for, because like you said, like as much as like, you know, Caitlin is kind of known for her offense, like on her end of the floor, like she's also one of the best facilitators on this Iowa team. And Iowa succeeds when Caitlin Clark is doing just as well facilitating as she is making her own shots. And so I think that's something that I'm going to be looking forward to, is like how much can UConn kind of disrupt that side of the floor for Caitlin in Iowa. But that should be a good one. Those are both really good matchups. Like I said, again, NC State versus South Carolina, Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN, followed by UConn versus Iowa. Man, oh man. And then the championship game will be Sunday, April 7 at 3 p.m. Eastern. I'm very excited. Cal, before we wrap things up, do you have any predictions? Because I got to put you on the spot here a little bit.
Yeah, you know, this is, again, back to the extreme groundbreaking analysis here. I'm going to go with South Carolina to win the championship. Mm-hmm. I'll believe it when I see it. Someone beating him. Let's just say that.
Yeah, and I'll go with what's in my bracket. And I've had this from the start because we had to fill out our brackets before the tournament started. I have South Carolina beating Iowa in the final. So we'll see if that happens. I know there, but there will be a small part of me rooting for UConn because of Aaliyah Edwards, because of the Canadian connections. So we'll see what happens. We'll see if UConn can pull off the upset versus Iowa. Also, just like that weird, like it's been like 3 seed versus 1 seed the last like 2 rounds, which is like bad year to be a 2 seed. I saw a lot of people talking about that on Twitter too. But yeah, a lot of exciting games that have happened, exciting Final Four coming up. Cal, have so much fun in Cleveland. Make sure you guys are following him at CWetzel31 to get all of that Cleveland Final Four content. You can follow myself at KrinaMM, follow her HoopStats at her HoopStats, wherever you listen to podcasts. Make sure you subscribe on YouTube as well. And Coast to Coast, we'll be back next week to tell you who the new will be a new reigning champion is of March Madness. Thanks.